Perfect. Recording has started. Welcome to the Aries Working Group call for December 11th, 2019. We have a couple issues. We're going to play the issue game. We're going to talk about, Stephen Curran's going to talk about using the Please Act and the Issue Credentials Protocol. And we're going to talk about what happened at the Connectathon and next steps based on both work there and elsewhere in the community. We are recording the call, and remind you of the Hyperledger Code of Conduct, as well as the antitrust policy. Let's be nice to each other and avoid doing illegal things that inhibit the good work that we're all doing. I've got the wiki page for meeting attendance. If you would please add yourself to the attendees list and then make any other updates that are needed to the agenda. And before we go too far, is anyone new here that has not introduced themselves and would like to?
I'm fairly new. My name is Michael Black. I just started working for Street Cred a couple weeks ago. I was at the Connectathon, so I got a little catching up to do with understanding all this, but I'm excited to learn.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you. We're glad you're here.
Thanks.
Good, good. Well, thanks everyone for being here. Announcements. There's a Indie Aries and Ursa edX course online. The other thing, because of the calendar, the way the calendar fell this year, not next week, but the following 2 weeks, this is December 25th and January 1st, falls on super awkward times for holidays. So we will not be having those meetings. The next meeting after this will be December 8th. There will be a diff alignment call tomorrow at noon US Mountain, and here's the Zoom link for that. This call is not going to be discussing details of the DIDCOM work itself, but to discuss the charter and make progress on those related issues. So this will be more of an administrative meeting. It will not yet be IPR protected, which is why we're not talking about any of those things, but we have plenty to talk about with the other stuff anyway. So that's what will be on the call tomorrow at noon US Mountain. So if you are not really interested in talking about the charter or ensuring things there, it might not be the highest priority call. If you are interested in making sure those things happen the way that you would like, then that's the one to join to make sure that we proceed in the way that will fit all of our needs. Any important issues from related meetings? We're trying to not, what? Someone had something.
This is Richard. One other announcement for those who are not aware, Hyperledger has changed the way they're doing the community calendar. It is now being tracked at groups.io alongside the mailing list instead of in Google. And we believe we've moved all the Aries appointments between the two calendars, but if your calendar feed is based off of the old Google Calendar ICS file, I strongly recommend you get the new ICS file so that you don't get confused when we add or cancel future appointments.
Thank you, Richard. And I just realized I had not did the thing you asked me to do to make sure that I'm all lined up there. So I add that to my list. Perfect. Drummond asks, is there a link to the new calendar?
Yes, I'll put that in the wiki agenda. When I moved everything from Indy, Aries, and the Identity Working Group, I believe I preserved everything exactly the same except for the Identity Implementers call that is tomorrow, not tomorrow, a week from tomorrow. That call, I changed the Zoom meeting to one that I knew where it came from and could make sure we recorded it. So that specific one has changed, but all the others should be the same, but you won't be current if you don't pull it from the new place.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you, Richard. So again, the Indie Contributors call is not tomorrow. It's next week. It is biweekly. We also, this was not the week for the morning Aries call. That is also next week. Any related meetings that are urgent enough to bring up here? And in the wiki, I've seen the calendar public meetings that Rich is adding. So thank you, Richard, for that.
Just one correction. The Indie Contributors call is every Monday. The Identity Working Group call was this week. The Identity Implementers Working Group call is next week.
Yes. And the calendar has those.
And the calendar should have all of those unless I made a mistake. Please tell me if I made a mistake.
Perfect.
Sam, Paul here regarding the Indie Semantics work group. We're in the same boat as you, so we're going to give the next one a miss, and the next one will be on January the 7th.
Excellent.
And I do believe I moved the Indie Semantics appointment as well, so that one should be all handled.
You did. Thanks, Richard.
Awesome. Okay, other related meetings or issues that need to be brought up before we get to work updates? Okay. On to projects and work updates. Aries KMS, there was some discussions about this at the Connectathon. We'll review that a little bit later, but anything to announce at this point?
Nope.
Perfect. If I skip and you don't want to be skipped, then please bring that up. Some of these issues, last week we had the Connectathon, some other things, so there may not be as much in. Pack Unpack, any progress there? Core libraries?
My understanding is with all the core libraries that the BCGov team has gotten started, but there's nothing for us to see yet. So that's the update for all those.
Perfect. But excited that stuff is happening, which is awesome. Aries Cloud Engine Python. There are notes in the page. Stephen, would you like to give us a summary?
Yes, I would. Okay.
Oh, we lost you. You said, yes, I would. Okay. And then there you go.
There we go. Yeah. I use the space bar mechanism, and if you change windows, it goes away. Okay. 0.4.0 is out on PyPI. Release notes are linked there. So it is, since we went from 0.3.x to 0.4, it's a breaking change. The change is internal, primarily having to do with how protocols, where protocols are in the structure of the repo, and as well how existing plugins get loaded at runtime. So anyone who has built a plugin would have to be aware of this as well. If you're using the startup parameter --- protocol, which is the old plugins way, that has changed to --- plugin. Be aware of those. Other than that, the external protocols should not have changed, so we should be good to go with just interop with other implementations and things. No difference anyway. And then there's a couple of noteworthy changes that I mentioned in the list, but as always, the release notes are listed.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And it'll be nice to have a pinned version that integrates with the toolbox so that we can update the plugin to that. And it'll be a little more easy to point people to something they want to try. So that will be awesome.
Yep.
Thanks for that. Cool. Troy, Aries Framework, go.
Sure. So we continue to work on routing and WASM primarily. So some interesting work we've done. We were able to actually do data exchange inside the browser from the WebAssembly built on top of Aries Framework Go. And the next step is to do that between two different tabs with different WASM applications forwarded via Mediator. So that's gonna be the next target. Other than that, we were of course looking at the JWE envelopes. And I guess that about wraps it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Troy. Do we have Jack today, Aries SDK Ruby? I don't know that I see him on today. Okay, anything from the street cred team on framework.net? All right, static agent Python, I see a cursor there.
I don't have anything new to report on that one.
Okay, and as far as the toolbox, this is mildly old news. We still have the plugin and everything else. We will get probably this week the necessary changes made. We've been tracking a few of them as they've happened with Akapai, but the toolbox plugin for Akapai will be updated to include that. One of the notable updates that we've made recently is that if you have configured the endpoints option in your Akapai instance to have a WebSocket endpoint, the toolbox will actually prefer WebSockets instead of an HTTP connection for the transport to use. It will still work with both, but it will prefer WebSockets, which actually helps a lot with demos and things as we were using ngrok to tunnel. And you tend to hit the throttle a heck of a lot less when you are using a WebSocket instead of individual requests. So that's the only real change to be made there. Framework Java. How about SDK JavaScript? Okay, rich schemas and verifiable credentials. This was a lot of discussion at the Connectathon. Anything specifically to report? All right, we also talked about migration from libmini and so the core library stuff that will come up in our review of the Connectathon in a minute. Any other work updates that we should cover before we move on to our agenda? Awesome. Okay. Here's our agenda today for the issue game, and then we have a request from Kyle to add another one. I will attempt to do that first, Kyle, as long as you can review that, as I've not had time. Okay. And then let's do that one first. Requests are better than not requests. So I'd like to hit that one first. And then I have four other picks as time permits. Stephen Curran's going to do a presentation on a suggestion on PleaseAct and the issue credentials protocol. We'll talk about the Connectathon update. And hopefully this is not Sam talking about the whole thing, but we can review that. And then we have open discussion about other topics that's come up. So Kyle, I'm going to bring up the issue here. You want 331?
Yeah. So this is just a question that popped in my mind about ACKs when I was thinking about the differences between TCPs and UDP and the kind of the differences. And so I was curious if there was any additional feedback on this. If there's not, I think it's ready to be closed. It was more just kind of a question of if we use the requirement of an ACK in a protocol, does that make it secretness? I think George pointed out down below that with the transport layer that it doesn't. And I think that's a pretty good answer, but I was curious where other people fell. And I figured this would be easy to clean up.
Yes, someone's speaking.
So to be clear, all I did was just say what's written in the current text for the RFC. I just want to make that clear. I'm not, I didn't quite understand the question, to be honest, Kyle.
Okay. So I mean, the whole premise of it is like, having the guarantees from like a protocol. So say, for example, the verifiable credential exchange require the use of the ACK when you receive a message. Does that make it synchronous in nature? And I tended to think that it was no. And the reason I was going this direction was
is this a property that we want, and how would we do this?
Yeah, so what the ACK message does is simply drive state. And the reason why I didn't quite understand the question is because state transitions is independent from whether the messages are delivered via a duplex or simplex channel of communication. And I'm not entirely sure if we are conflating simplex and duplex with synchronicity or asynchronicity. So I'm that's where I get confused.
Okay.
That's where my thought brain was too, but someone else is speaking.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say the term synchronous and asynchronous depends on the layer in which you apply it. So if you say that at a given layer, packets are delivered in order and there aren't any out of order packets, then you could say that that protocol is synchronous because it has synchronized the packets to be in order. TCP does that for you, but you can build a protocol in UDP which doesn't deliver packets in order, but on top of UDP, you do out of order packet delivery, and then they look synchronous to your application. If you have a state machine and the state machine recognizes out of order packets and doesn't use them to change state, then synchronicity of the delivery of packets is immaterial to that state machine.
Okay.
A better question is how do you manage out of order delivery packets than synchronous or asynchronous? Probably.
Well, I think it's a weird, the thought I had about the word is that given that the transports are not all necessarily synchronous, I think it's more or less an orthogonal concern, meaning the transports, the synchronous nature of that matters more, but given the message-based architecture that we've got, then it doesn't. My argument is in alignment with George in that it doesn't. Simply requiring that a protocol ACK doesn't state that the ACK must travel back in the same in the same connection, although return route could allow it to, but in the way that you'd normally think of synchronous. We tend to think of like a REST request as like a synchronous response because we send it and then we get a response back. And the use of ACK does not imply that model. Is my vote there?
Okay, that's where I ended up on this too after the discussion. So I just wanted to bring it up, and it sounds like we're all in the same alignment with it. So I feel like this can be closed.
Perfect. You are welcome to close it. And if you want to, when I close these, just as a matter of procedure, I usually note that we talked about it in the Aries working group call with a date, and then just close it. And that way, someone, if they want to, can go pull up the recording and hear what we had to say about it.
Okay, I'll do that.
Perfect. Okay, let's continue on with the game. This is RFC 29, signature verification in the message trust context. This is opened by Daniel Bloom, and we have comments from Daniel and Daniel and the other Daniel and Kyle about this. And this one, we had this was added since I actually added this to my list, but we've moved away from the SIG into adding signatures into attachments. And so the question is there anything else more to be done on this particular thing?
I do have like one side question, if you would humor me. Like, are these MTCs messages or something which is sent between agents, or is it something that is totally within an agent?
An agent.
So... okay.
So the idea of a message trust context is that it contains the metadata around a message, how it was received, the transport that was used, the verification of the keys, etc.
So is this something that is any way at all exported outside an agent?
No.
Like maybe through export, I'm going to use the outdated term wallet, but just humor me, an export wallet function would output this as well?
I don't know that it would. I think the functionality of a message trust context dies when you no longer need the message. So it's not necessarily persisted in the same way in the air quote wallet as the as the other pieces of information about a relationship.
Okay.
So in that case, I would answer probably not, because it's, you know, it's specific to the receipt of messages. And I don't know that we have an expectation that when you export data from, you know, an Aries project, that what comes along with it also includes necessarily those types of items. So my supposition was that this sort of didn't matter quite anymore because of the move away from SIG. And so that this could be closed. Any objections to this issue being closed? Okay.
I don't mind it being closed, but I think Daniel Bloom's final comment there is a good one, and we should probably, like, I don't know what we should do about it. Maybe we should go add a sentence to the attachment decorator and or the message trust decorator to kind of capture that tribal knowledge before the issue disappears.
I love that. Daniel, is that something that you think, Daniel, I had to qualify. Daniel Bloom, is that, are those updates you feel qualified to write?
Yeah, I can do that.
Perfect. Okay, then I'm going to leave this open until that's done, but let's, as soon as those updates are done and accepted, we can link to those from the issue and then close it. Perfect. Daniel Hardman, that's a great suggestion. Next up on the list is 67. DIDDOC conventions did inline representations using DID query, opened by Samuel Smith with a lengthy explanation. Comments from me, Peacekeeper, that's Marcus, and more notes from Samuel. And then we have it referenced in several actual places. Samuel, do you have any comments on this issue?
Yeah, you can close it because it's really been moved to the DID Resolver working group.
Perfect. Okay. So, and there's a link already in here, so we'll go ahead and close this one. Excellent. 66, non-reputable signature support. This was opened by Kyle and May, comments from Daniel and Tobias, and Stephen Curran, me, and quite lengthy here. And the final comments here, you know, indicate that there's some progress having been made on this. Kyle, do you have any comments on this issue?
It's been implemented in the DIDCOM.js library. It hasn't been implemented elsewhere yet, but it does work. As for the APIs and stuff like that. And so I think it is good to close. It was more just to kind of track that work.
Is there any tribal knowledge that came out of this that ought to be end up in some RFCs somewhere?
Yes, but I'm not going to be able to say with certainty what it is right now. I'm only going to be able to recognize it once it's there, unfortunately. I would say the majority of the tribal knowledge exists in understanding the usage of JWSs, and that the only implementation that's been tried right now is ED25519, which is legal with JWSs, but most implementations don't support. So you're likely still going to have to go write your own JWS implementation, or at least match that data model.
Well, and it strikes me that this flows nicely into the DIDCOM discussions as well moving forward. So we'll be able to pick up those same issues, I think, as we move forward. Yeah. Okay. Any objections to closing this issue? Okay. One more on my list for today. Daniel proposed that we adopt the RFC 2119 keywords, which are things like should and must. There was not necessarily a lot of controversy here. Daniel, any comments on this? Daniel Hardman? Well,
I just love Stephen's tongue-in-cheek use of it in the comments.
I started reading that and I just was cracking up.
I think if people feel good about this, then a logical next step would be we close the ticket saying, yes, we plan to do this, and then we probably ought to do a quick pass through. Everybody could do a quick pass through their favorite RFC and say, where should we be using the word should in all caps instead of just you know, saying that this is what ought to happen in a casual way and kind of upgrade the language. But I don't think it's something that one person could do in a single PR. It'll take too long.
Just a note on the word should. We're usually given the advice that we should avoid the word should and instead try to do must unless to avoid cases where the spec is ambiguous and people may or may not support something. But other than that, I think this kind of language does make the spec a lot more clear.
So you use should in the argument that we should not use should, and now I'm conflicted.
We must not use the word should unless we can, unless we can't avoid it.
Yes, I was trying to put that to words, Daniel, but you did a better job than I think I could. Excellent. So good. I will close this as well. And I think also this is something that we don't necessarily have to go do an exhaustive immediate search and replace on, but it will improve our documentation going forward.
Should we be doing checks on this? Like, would it be nice to add this to the pipeline or anything like that? I don't even know if you can.
We must do checks on this unless there's unless the test framework prevents us from doing so.
We should, but Kyle may write those tests. Or should Kyle must write those tests?
By the way, can we at least put a note in this before we close it? Drummond has suggested we upgrade to RFC 6919 instead of 2119. It's a slightly more evolved version of the same thing.
Yes.
Before you go too far with that, you should read 6919. My favorite one there is the keywords must, but we know you won't. No, seriously, it's worth a good read. I just had to put it in there because it was pointed out to me, and it's if you want a good holiday read, but by all means, we do not want to upgrade to that one.
Well, I've recorded a comment for posterity. So, yes. So this is good, and I think we close this, and then we work on it in the future. As far as whether it needs to land, I'm not sure that any occurrence of the word should be a capital should, and so that makes it difficult to test for in the regression test for the RFCs.
Just to be clear on that one, the capitalization is actually how you differentiate between normative and non-normative. So it gets around the issue of the fact that sometimes you want to use must, may, or should in ordinary sentences and not normative requirements. That's why the capitalization. So,
yes. And so testing for this and maybe a little more difficult.
Your point. Yes. You can't just test on every instance of the word.
Right. Which means that I think what we do is we take it upon ourselves. We should probably, update any, the how to write an RFC thing, and we might include a note in there that links to that, and that way people can be aware of that. And then I think as a community, I think this is something that we gradually work towards as the process of updating things. Good. Okay. Any final comments on this one? Excellent. Okay. That's the end of the issue game.
Did we win?
Yes. In 15 minutes, we went through 5 tickets, and we have an action item on one of them, and the rest can be closed. So that's excellent. So we definitely won. And then, Stephen, are you ready to talk about PleaseAct and the issue credentials protocol?
You bet. Let me share my screen.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, PleaseAct. So we were going to do a couple of weeks ago, and we haven't got around to it, so let's try it today. I call this discovering things in RFCs, because basically this came about because as we were trying to get some of the RFCs that we have implemented into accepted status, we discovered some things, and in processing issuing credentials and in going through that RFC, we discovered some ambiguity and the need for clarification. So first thing is to talk about RFC 0015, which is ACTS, and I was trying to have it become accepted. The original version of the RFC had the adoptable ACK message. So an ACK, a standard ACK with a standard format, but it would be adopted into different protocols. It also described a decorator called Please ACK. And it also describes some extended capabilities around Please ACK, such as being able to request a Please ACK that gets responded to every few hours or something like that. So on a time basis, also based on events that occur. So the idea we had, and I checked this with some people, was to get RFC 0015 accepted, we split basically the RFC into two. 0015 retained only the message part, the adoptable message, and RFC 317 was added as the Please ACK RFC that included all of the other pieces, so the Please ACK decorator and the extended capabilities. In the process, we discovered that there are some references to Please ACK in other RFCs, and so we updated those to point to RFC 0317. So kudos to the CI/CD pipeline in the RFC repo that detected links that no longer applied, links that had no target to them. So good stuff there. We submitted a PR to make RFC 0015 accepted, and I thought I was done with all that, and we could move on as we would. What we discovered when ACAPI was implemented and implementing RFC 0036, which is the issue protocol, that it appears that we use implicit ACKs, which is referenced in the ACK protocol, which is to say implicit ACKs merely say that when you do a state transformation one to the next message is essentially an implicit ACK that the previous one was accepted. So if you, for example, send a credential offer to the holder, the fact that the holder sends you back a request credential is an implicit ACK that message was received. So that's the idea of an implicit ACK. But we also have an ACK at the end that says, hey, we received the credential, and that's in this. But later, the RFC says that the ACK from the holder should be in response to a please ACK from the issuer. In other words, Based on this interpretation, the ACK is explicitly here, and we should send it. And that's what ACAPI and I believe StreetCred, the framework .NET has done. The RFC actually says that the ACK should only be sent if a please ACK is sent in the issue protocol step. So you issue the protocol here. And if you send in doing that a please ACK decorator, then this ACK would be sent. So you would know that the holder has the credential. Bit of a play on words there. I hope you enjoy it. What do we do? So we've got a clarification needed in the protocol. So that's basically what this presentation is about, to get input from the community. We could update the implementations to follow the wording in the RFC, which is process the please ACK decorator, only send an ACK if the please ACK is present. In doing that, we probably, for ARIES interop protocol 1.0, probably want to again split out RFC 317 to separate some of the extended features so we can mark the please ACK decorator as accepted. The there's a couple of questions around the Please Act, such as where do you implement the Please Act? Do you put it in the message receiver module so that although if you want an ACK on receipt, for example, do you send that as by the element that receives the message but has no real context about what it is, just simply saying, hey, I got this, and sending an answer back? Or do you do it in the protocol handler once the protocol handler has been invoked? Do you allow the requester to have a preference? So there's a couple of potential clarifications in the Please Act 317 itself that might be needed. And then the last thing is, do we update the 0036 RFC, I should have specified that, which is the issue credential, to say that instead of doing this Please Act in that one, we actually simply acknowledge what has been implemented already and say we're going to use implicit act of the process and we're not going to actually rely on the Please Act. And put a note. Oh, am I?
We got the gist of it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And then the last thing is I had other thoughts and connection protocol is one where we're definitely seeing a need for an ACK at the finish of it. There is no ACK currently, and it would be nice to have that. That could be done with a Please Act decorator without actually changing the connection protocol at all, but having the implementation support that. Right now, what generally happens is as soon as you establish a connection, you do some sort of thing like trust ping to make sure that the connection is active. And the reason we do that is because there is actually not an ACK at the end of it. So the one of the parties does not know that the connection has been established, and that's a problem. So with that, we go to the final page. Really, what should we do? So, comments from anyone?
On your question about when to send the ACK response, I think the Please ACK decorator does include some discussion about the possibility of a word on. This is an on attribute of Please ACK, where you say, is this on receipt, on outcome, or on something else? And so there is the notion already of being able to express your desire there.
But on receipt has these two issues. Is it the general function that receives it and sends it right back? Or do we suggest that the protocol handler take a look at the message, make sure that it makes sense for the state of the protocol as we are now, and then send the ACK from the protocol handler? That's kind of the question that I'm raising here.
If the protocol has to do the ACK, though, wouldn't you be better off putting it as part of the behavior of the protocol and not as a separate decorator?
Yes, that is my preferred option, to be honest. And also here in the first point, message receiver module, to what layer are we ascribing this module to? To the transport layer? Because surely there's an out-of-band ACK involved at the transport layer there when the message is received.
Okay, so a couple of things. I think the Please ACK has a lot of value in allowing it, so I don't think that we have to be explicit in all of them. So that would be my view. The point here, George, is that every implementation will have a thing that generically receives a message and then sort of expands the message enough to say, oh, this is such and such a thread and I need to pass it to this protocol handler and it's this message type, so I have to hand it to this protocol handler. So the question there is, so it's not really a transport layer, it's in the agent already, but is it has it only read enough to say, oh, they've got a Please ACK in here, so I better tell them, hey, I got the message? Or do you want to wait till the protocol looks at the message in more detail and verifies, for example, that the I've received it. I haven't processed it, but I have looked at it enough that I know the message is reasonably constructed. In other words, it makes sense as a response to the previous message I got.
So
that's the only difference in those two.
There's a couple of things here that make me uncomfortable. Like, what if we combined a service decorator with a please act decorator? I mean, we don't want to create a situation where you could ever act back to a route that you didn't receive the message on, because we don't want to open up, you know, open relays or backscatter attacks.
Say that again.
So,
and why?
You should only ever be able to act back along the path that you received the message on, right? Because otherwise, mixing this in willy-nilly where it's not part of the protocol's logic could open us up to where I could send you a message that had a different return route service decorator, where I'm going to give you an encrypted message in order to cause you to send encrypted messages to someone else.
Well, but Nathan, that's a general characteristic of a non-duplex transport, is that you're going to send back in some other way than what you got it. So you can't really say, don't communicate back unless you're using the same route or you lose some transport.
No. He Nathan added nuance there. He was not, at one point in the middle, he specifically referred to unregistered sending back responses, in this case an ACK, to an previously unregistered connection.
That's right.
So that's what Nathan said.
If it's a path you know about, that's fine. It's that someone should say, here, ACK this, but ACK it to some place you've never heard of before.
Yeah, how would you do that check?
Well, this is fairly unrelated to ACKs, but it's heavily related to the service decorator and the concept that you might include suddenly an additional endpoint to be used instead of the one that you had prearranged. And so I think the scope of this discussion probably needs to be on service decorators and how we limit backscatter attacks in those use, because in that case, it's not actually limited to ACKs. It's limited to all uses or all potential misuses of the service decorator.
Yeah, I think it's true. I would agree. I don't think that's part of this.
Andrew has a solution. We just never implement the service decorator.
So that's true. So coming back on point regarding the please act decorator, I'm actually strongly in favor of just having the protocols themselves define how they drive their states, as opposed to having this please act decorator essentially come up out of nowhere and fiddle around with the state transitions of a protocol.
It doesn't fiddle around with state transactions at all. By definition, it doesn't.
Please ACK is only used when you're not proposing to change your state because of it. You're just wanting additional information.
So a couple of places that I'm aware of it's needed. One is where you want to make that final message optional, for whatever reason. So we chose not to include an explicit ACK on the connection protocol, and same for bit exchange as far as I know. So that could be a wrong decision at which we'd want to rethink it. The other one is the situation where you would want to confirm that the message was received, knowing that a response could take some time to be returned. So the next step of the protocol could take quite a while, and you just don't want to, you want to know that at least the party got the message. So the example there is the classic example of that is on a messaging protocol where you want to see that the person received it, but you know that it's a human behind it and they could take hours to respond and take the next step in the protocol. So those are two classic examples where you'd actually want this as an optional piece.
This may run us down a rat hole. So if it does, let's avoid this really quickly. calling that out. But is it possible to use the transport layer to get the same functionality? So I'm thinking in terms of returning like a 200 accepted and closing the connection.
No, it's not.
No.
Okay. Because
you can have relays in between the sender
exactly.
and the receiver, and they can change what the transport is.
Yep.
Okay.
So the use, the reason to not ACK all the time is because there's some marginal utility in not sending ACKs that you don't want. But given that there's implicit ACKs in the protocol, how useful is that optimization? Is that like an optimization that adds complexity but doesn't really save us that much?
So there's an optimization, Sam, but there's also a privacy component to this. If somebody wants to know exactly what Alice is doing and can guarantee that every time she sends out a message, an ACK is going to come back and they can watch the return of the ACK, they may be able to learn things that they couldn't learn on the outbound communication. So I don't think it's only an optimization.
Yeah, I agree. ACKs are, you can use ACKs as a way to get information, but since there's implicit ACKs in the packets coming back, it's still a degree of privacy, right? Right? Is it, I guess I'm not sure how valuable that is. But you know, that's a use case. I'm just trying to understand the main motivation for it. The other thing I'm concerned about is there anything that's not idempotent in the protocol, so that if I send duplicate packets in order to induce an ACK, would that change the state of the protocol? Like retries.
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
This is an area where we don't have a lot of written documentation. We only have intuitions and simple conversations in front of whiteboards. But I think the answer, I agree with Stephen. I think no.
Yeah, that would be one thing to check for, because that would be a really bad side effect, is that if somebody wants to get an ACK and a packet gets dropped, so they resend a packet to force an ACK, and then that changes the state inadvertently because the state machine it's not an idempotent state machine at every step. Anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a problem to have protocols decide that they want explicit ACKs at certain places, and that's kind of the direction that George was going. But I do think that there are legitimate uses of optional ACKs. One is that you don't realize you want an ACK until later. So, you know, you send a response, or you send a message to Fred, and you were expecting Fred to give you a response within 5 minutes. And 10 minutes go by and he hasn't responded, and you start wondering, did he ever get that? You could just resend, but resending, even if there's not an idempotency problem, resending might not be the thing that you want to do, either because it's not convenient for you to reformulate the message, or because there's new expiration properties than what there was before, or whatever. So what you want to do is you want to just send a message and say, hey, please ACK message 123 that I just sent you, to, so that I know that you actually got it. That's kind of
Is that like a polling pattern in a way? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. Like where you're polling to see if it's still on their queue to be processed.
Well, I don't want... Actually, if you go read the verbiage in the RFC, it goes to some trouble not to set too high in expectations. You're not supposed to really be able to know what another agent is doing except through the protocol engagement that you have. But we need a little bit of a tool set for troubleshooting and for checking liveness. You know, like all of us get on the phone and we're talking to somebody, and we've had the experience where we talk and all of a sudden we realize that the other side's been quiet for a long time and we say, "Are you still there?" The "Are you still there?" is a please ack. And it was a spontaneous thing that we didn't anticipate when we started the conversation, but we just got into a circumstance where we wanted it. So I think it's a useful tool. I don't think it should be used. I don't think I would call it polling exactly, but it's like poking the other side to see if they react.
I guess okay.
That's a little bit like polling, but it's not constantly connect or constantly collecting signals from the other side about something. It's just polling once.
I think it's the softest form of polling you could have.
Okay, I think there might be a nuance between the two, which is a polling typically still gets a response back, like a no, whereas this has the optionality of just never sending a response still.
Yes. You're asking for one, kindly, but there's no protocol requirement that the other side actually does it.
And if we did want that, then that's where George's suggestion of requiring it through the protocol comes in.
Right. And requiring it through the protocol has the, you're making a trade-off, and Sam has suggested that maybe you're not trading very much away, but let me just articulate what it is. you're saying, I'm going to get more chatty. And the benefit of the more chattiness is that there's greater clarity and confidence on both sides. And the drawback is chattiness. And that may not be a very big drawback in most cases, but there may be some cases where it's a little bit annoying. I'm thinking about where the transport isn't something like a live network. It's more like SneakerNet, right? So you define a let's just go down a road of, oh yes, we're going to require an explicit ACK, and the transport is SneakerNet. Well, that's a much more onerous requirement on SneakerNet than it is when you're talking over sockets. So we just need to think about whether the trade-off is a good idea or not.
Yeah.
I'm not arguing it really hard one way or the other. I'm just pointing out there's legitimate reasons to think about it.
Yeah, well, that's where I tend to fall with this too, is I'm not certain, and it sounds like you could introduce some of the complexity if you start causing state change unintentionally, which comes down to implementation design. And that's what I'm wondering is, what is the additional complexity that you introduce by doing that? And having not implemented, I can't have an opinion. But that would be my only concern, is what happens to state management and the complexity you have to now deal with because of it.
I appreciate that this allows for more or less a spectrum of options. And I like that, because some protocols, it's going to matter a lot that you are very precise in about how things happen. And some, it's going to be a better advantage to be looser. And this allows for both. But that's a bit of a squirrel from the direct question that Steven's asking. but generally, I like that design.
So I guess my general take on this would be, I would be very interested to see what you guys walk away with having implemented this or anything, like as a proof of concept. And I think that would be more of an opinion. Unfortunately, I don't have the capability to go try and build one right now to try and learn it better. But I mean,
this is primarily dealt with people that are actually building libraries right now. So Thomas Loft, Troy and George and our team. I mean, we interpreted the issue credential protocol as having an ACK at the end of the process, so there was an explicit ACK in it. So we don't really need the please ACK on this. And so an easy answer for us would be the first one, which is simply take out, update the implementations. It's this one over here, which is remove the reference to the please ACK in the 0036 as a clarification. maybe extend it to say, or include a phrase to say that an explicit act is intended by the holder to send to the issuer, and we're done. That would definitely work for us. We definitely will be proposing something along the connection protocol to update it to say there needs to be an ACK. And again, we'll have to deal with the same issue, which is, do you want to make it a formal ACK at the end of every protocol, connection protocol, or do you want to use the please ACK decorator, which would fit better with what we've got today, which is we don't have a formal one, a formal explicit ACK in the connection protocol, but if the decorator was used, then implementations could implement it as they find necessary. So,
I won't argue too hard if we want to make an explicit ACA requirement at the end of 36. I think okay. It might be, there's a bit of a trade-off there, but probably not a bad one. The only hesitation I have is, could you imagine a future version of the protocol that does batching? And if so, would the ACK be on a whole batch or on an individual credential? Would the ACK on every credential get in the way of a batch is really the question I'm asking. But that's a future question. We don't have to solve it.
Yeah.
Today. So for now, I don't mind doing that. But on the other one, I think I would vote to make it optional. I think the connection or did exchange protocol is so often followed by something else that effectively becomes the implicit ACK for the previous protocol that I don't think I want to require that we do that, but I could be talked out of that too if the whole world votes the other way.
Yeah, as they say, I think the implementations right now have it very explicit that there is an ACK sent immediately after whether you send a please ACK or not. In fact, nobody sends please ACKs as far as I know right now. At the end of 36, there is an explicit ACK, and that's been implemented by the different libraries as far as I know. George, do you know what? You guys haven't done 36 yet, so you don't know yet. Tomislav, I don't know if you're on the call. Anyone from Street Cred that knows that? I'm pretty sure that's what they do, but or at least anyone from the familiar with the Aries framework.net that can answer that.
I'm not sure about that. I can ask Tomislav later and get back to you guys. I don't think he's on the call.
I see you know. I saw you come off mute.
All right, so that would mean that RFC 317 doesn't have to move to accepted right now. I kind of like that because there is a section of that RFC with the advanced features, and now that we've talked about this in a community call, maybe there will be some people in the community that'll go think about that section and have opinions about it. At the time we wrote that section, a lot of it was pretty theoretical, and you know, at first we put that in, and then Steven said, this seems too advanced for what we're trying to do right now. So we made it a note and said, this is not required to be implemented. It's just thinking so you can see where we're headed. But already we've come up with a use case where we want to distinguish between just receiving a message and actually processing it in some meaningful way, which is part of the advanced stuff. So maybe people can go think about that and we'll get useful ideas.
So those are the two things we're going to do. And then we'll leave connection. And leave connection did exchange to evolve.
Cool. Side note to build on what Daniel Hardman said. We designed a lot of these things. There's kind of a lot to get going in the beginning before anything worked. And it's really exciting that we're actually getting to the point now where we actually have more experience with these aspects of things and we're learning and getting better at this. It's nice that it's not all theoretical, because it was that way for a minute in the beginning, too long of a minute, and it was a little bit difficult to get to the part where we had something that was a workable foundation to discuss.
To throw a bit more on explicit experience with the org book issuer holder, provided issuing credentials to the holder in high volume, the explicit ACK or ACK coming back from each issuance was crucial. We in fact added it incorrectly at first. We added a separate message that we thought we needed. I'm not sure where that came from, but it was absolutely necessary that we had the ACK at the end of that, so we knew where we were on each issuance of the 2 million issuances we were doing in as fast as we could. So that's a little bit of practical experience we've had.
That's good. Do you think that if we allowed you to ACK multiple messages at the same time, that would be a good thing, or it would be bad complexity?
It might be a good thing, but because we do horizontal scaling, we never know which of our agents, our instances of agents, is actually going to process each message, because they actually go across multiples. So probably it would have to be explicit on versus on a batch.
Okay.
That's just off the top, mind you. If we did an actual batch protocol, it would probably be easier. Anyway, thank you for that. I will go with these steps for now. Michael, if you could get back and get Thomas Loft to weigh in if he has any objection to the explicit ACK on 36, let me know. Otherwise, I will do a PR to clarify the wording on that, and we'll go from there.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks. Over to you, Sam.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephen. That's some really fantastic discussion. Next on the agenda is a Connectathon update. Many of us were there, not all of us were, but what I was hoping to do is, as we discuss the items that the work that we did there, we can place a focus on the next, what we're doing as a result of, or what the next steps are in each of those particular topics. And so that is what I am hoping we orient ourselves towards. And that way it's also useful for those of us who are there. There were a couple of side conversations. We didn't have a very multi-tracked conference, but there were some that I did not end up being in. And so looking for help and as we address these issues and talk about the progress that was made and then what's next there. So given that, and I apologize for this order, Stephen, but I think it's pretty relevant. The Aries NRI profile discussion was quite good. And we had, we talked about which RFC should be part of that, this being the first one, and which should not, and come in later ones. Stephen, can you update us on sort of where the status of that work is?
Sure. I have a presentation again, so let me share. Because I don't like doing these without having a presentation so people can see what I'm talking about. There we go. I'll go back to sharing that, but I'll switch to Aries Interop Profile 1.0.0. I don't know if the O is supposed to be capitalized. I'm not sure of that. I'll have to look at the RFC. These were the outcomes from the discussion we had. So we are going with this naming of Aries Interop Profile 1.0 AIP 1.0.0. So there was a couple of people that still use the term Aries Stable, and we wanted to get rid of that. So Aries Interop Profile is where we're going. We have an aim for January 31st for announcements for those meeting the profile. And that's basically what the teams are now went away with talking about. There was a lot of desire to try this and learn from the first version. So let's gain experience from using the mechanism before we get too far into the what's next discussions. The next discussions, what's the next version that we're going to support will come. I suspect it will come before January 31st, but we don't want to be too aggressive was basically the feedback of those in the room and those building building towards this January 31st date. There was a desire for flexibility in how you declare support. So there, the idea in the RFC was that there's a summary table that implementers can update their, basically their lines in the RFC, and those would just be accepted. So self-attested credentials saying, hey, yeah, we support this. We wanted to be able to sort of state the types of agents within that table that, that get supported, because as people point out, specifically, you know, this one, a holder cloud agent, would probably not need to support a bunch of the protocols, like dealing with issuing and verifying credentials, and still be useful in the interop profile. So I, you know, I'm sort of proposing these sort of four, and that might be enough. I did this rather quickly, but these four sort of types of agents would be talked about, and you would be able to declare in your entries in the summary table, hey, we support being a holder cloud agent, which sort of implies that a holder cloud agent doesn't support the verifiable credentials exchange. And if that's the only thing you support, it would not be surprising to someone trying to use your agent that you didn't support that. As well, while we don't have a test suite and we don't have results from a test suite to point to, that builders would have a link to a basically a caveat page by agent to say, you know, here's here's variations that we support. So we support the trust ping, but we don't actually, we only respond to them. We don't ever send them. Maybe that's something you want to say. So you want to say which roles of the protocol you support. And this really meets that goal that we put out as to the ability for the different builders to communicate their adherence to the version. So we don't, you know, there's been some discussion of how do we water it down a little, and we don't want to really water it down too much to say, oh, I, you know, I support it, but I actually only support two of the protocols. We generally want to support it, but as well, we don't want to, you know, overburden the implementers. The specific protocols we discussed, so we raised the issue of what do people think of what is in and what is out in the list right now. And as well, we talked about which ones were missing potentially. So which ones are there that we may not want to see, and which ones are missing. And we basically came to a consensus in the room in a straw poll that in and out are sort of these ones. The trust ping and service decorator would be in, but that basic message timing, transport return route, and please act would be out. And I've got a caveat on that. We've talked about it a whole bunch in the last, and that's probably fine, but I do want to mention something on in the gaps. And the method we use to determine sort of these discussions, as well as, you know, some people saying, hey, we don't support that, we don't think we can, the basis was really the goal of the AIP is to be able to have agents be able to establish connections and exchange credentials. And those are the main uses right now. And so that's how we got to these. Anyone want to comment on that while I've got this one up?
No, that's a great summary. It was a good discussion about every one of these.
Okay. Funny, I was I just read the notes while I was saying that. Okay, I'm going to leave that one. I won't. The noted gap that I wanted to talk about, we generated a lot of discussion, and we hadn't really talked about this a lot in the past, but the reuse of connections. So the sequence where you display an invitation QR code, you scan the QR code, you create a new connection, and you proceed. But what happens if you already have a connection for that service? We haven't really got into that. And based on this goal of connections and exchange, that seems to be a missing step. I think it can be, it's somewhat mitigated by places where we're using connectionless challenges. So by including the service decorator, we sort of are seeing that, but it immediately had discussions have started on this, and I think this will be a big topic. Probably won't affect 1.0, but I suspect that various agents will come up with agent-specific ways of making sure you're reusing a connection if you can, and I don't know if that's way. So that's one, and then the other is this ACK thing that we just talked about, where at the end of a connection process, we don't actually ACK one of the users, one of the participants. Connection response does not get an ACK at the end of it, and that generally means that there's a follow-up message to confirm the connection has been established, so that a trust ping was used by a couple of them as a standard way of doing that. So we might want to look at that. But I think, obviously these are not key and we can proceed with 1.0. I just, as things that came out of the connection, that people started during after the connectathon that I noticed. So the next step, I plan on putting a PR into the RFC to complete the definition of 1.0, confirm what protocols are in and out, verify the versions of the protocol that are in, define the agent types that we talked about that can be listed in the adherence table. So that will be a, sort of get community consensus. I was thinking, do I do that as an issue or a PR? I think I'll just do it as a PR and let people comment on that and then propose that it move forward. We all encouraged each other to review the IN protocols for any clarifications and necessary changes. So for example, 36 and 37 do not actually have the state machine table that are in many of the protocols. Those really should be there, so that would not change the protocol, so wouldn't require a change in the AIP version, but it would be a good thing to have that in there. Anything as well, clarifications like that Please ACK that would at this point be non-breaking changes. But we would also want anyone to raise issues where they think breaking changes are necessary or very desirable. We have a little bit of time between now and where we want to finish this, and if people identify things, they should absolutely do that. And then the final thing is I will keep, I've been doing this sort of in the background, but pushing for accepted on any protocols in the AIP 1.0 that are not yet in that state to make sure that anything in that meets the, all of the protocols should be in the accepted state to be included in a AIP. So that's all I got. Comments, suggestions, or is that good enough?
It's, well, good enough is not the appropriate description here, Stephen. Fabulous, outstanding, amazing.
Over the top, Drummond, over the top.
No, it seems to be just a, really good advancement of sort of adding in the details of what it really is going to mean to have interop profile, and a good summary of all the stuff that was discussed at the Connectathon. So,
yeah, it was a lot of good discussion on that, I thought.
So, I have a question for you. So let's say I built, this code base that was significantly better than what you have defined in this interop profile, right? And people adopted it more. How would you deal with that? And how would we adopt whatever code base is getting used more?
I think that would be the discussion of what is AIP 1.1 or 1.2. I mean, I think in the caveats that people can put in, where we encourage the builders to say, okay, here's additional things that this agent supports. In addition to saying, oh, there's caveats in that they maybe only support some parts of certain protocols. They can also put in, oh, by the way, we also support all of these other things. And if you want to start using them and you work with, you know, you can tell your users that you can use this mobile agent because it supports these other things. And that will drive what goes into the next one. Does that answer your question, Cam?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, thank you.
Right. Yeah, I think
I want to underscore that this is not a limit.
Exactly. And not only that, but code rules, right? We all sort of adhere to that in this environment, which is, you know, you have this balance of being able to work with everyone that we want so that people don't have to hunt, you know, and have explicit, oh, you can only use this agent or you can only use that. We want this diversity of solutions that are available at Interop. On the other hand, if people are able to implement protocols and get them to work, then it certainly would encourage others to move that forward and put those into a next one. All for it.
Right. You can always implement more. The goal is that that's an interoperability profile that we can sort of use as a meeting point. You can always build more. And then as we build more, like, that's super good input for the next iterations so that we can reach interoperability there too.
I actually think this is Drummond. There's a little bit more profound point there, which is interop profiles. I don't want to call it lowest common denominator, but call it lowest community denominator. The whole goal is right. It is something that everyone says, okay, we can all do that. And then we keep raising the bar, right? So if they're not folks building well in advance of this, then we're never going to be able to raise the bar. Yeah.
Yep. The thing to acknowledge too is that there's desire for other profiles. We've already talked about a 2.0 that is tracking the non-indie based implementations. And it also brought up, well, do we have profiles for different roles or things like that? And Stephen mentioned this in the beginning, but I think as a community, it's a healthy thing to try this out and see how it works. And again, that doesn't stop any of the progress in designing or implementing things. But as far as a target, we should learn from this one and then see how we can apply that to future work. Awesome. Any comments on the interop profile? Stephen, next steps on this, is this to update the RFC and then seek a status change on it? Is that the next step?
I had it right on the screen just before I unshared. Yes, next steps, PR on the RFC, have all the implementers review the in protocols and push for accepted status on any of the protocols that are included in 1.0.0 but not in the accepted state. Those are the next steps.
You're right. You did cover that, and I apologize.
No worries.
Awesome. All right, thank you, Stephen, for covering that. The next thing I had on my list is, this was a minor thing that we accomplished there, but the community coordinated update where we talked about the need to do to update things in a community coordinated way. We had a good conversation there, and that resulted in an RFC here, which describes the general pattern to be used in these sorts of things. There's an RFC here that I'm sure we can update as we learn. And the first instance of this will be how we transition away from the DID-oriented base for the message types into a URI-based one. This describes that, and that'll be part of this first interoperability. The first step of that will be part of this first interoperability profile, so it relates a little. Anyway, if you haven't seen this, I wanted to draw a little bit of attention to that. Any questions? I'm not sure there's more to say there. Any questions? Okay. The next thing was testing. And this is probably going to take more than the 8 minutes we've got left. But as a quick summary, we talked about two different approaches to testing. One of them that is a little bit more of a unit test approach, and the other one demonstrated by some really cool code from the BCGov team, talked about an external approach where you script the interactions between two separate agents in order to test the interaction between them. There's certainly merits of both, and it was a really good discussion. We agreed that back channels are necessary for both of those tests for the full automation that we'll need, but then we didn't get a lot further than that. Sort of citing the need to go and experiment with things and sort of move that ball down the field a little bit. Any other comments about the testing discussions that we had? No one wants to make comments about the testing discussion.
I was going to say, after all the hours of discussion there, and no one wants to say everyone's just in complete agreement and harmony, or is folks just starting to go into a Christmas, pre-Christmas slump here?
I think it's more that we need some more thinking and doing time to be able to test out the ideas and the things that we learned. I don't know that we necessarily have complete agreement across the board, but it certainly was a bunch of thought-provoking discussion.
This is Richard. I was talking with Daniel, and then I was talking with Stephen Curran, and I got slightly different summaries of where we landed, especially about the back channel. Did we agree on a back channel?
Not that I know of. We agreed that we need a back channel. And then in the discussions of what the back channel actually looks like, didn't advance as far as I would have liked.
So what are the main next steps we took away? I think one is defining the back channel, right? Do we have a plan for doing that?
I think the idea was we would just sort of proceed with the two implementations and then keep coming back and checking in with one another to see where we land.
I think that's a reasonable summary. I think that there was some discussion about whether the back channels could be identical between the two, and the answer is maybe.
Yeah, exactly, and we have to learn more.
Yeah, and we got to learn more. Along those veins, Daniel Bloom's been working on the testing, and even though it's not settled and does not need to be part of the permanent thing going forward, we needed to try something from the back channel perspective. And so the test suite does have some back channel implementation stuff in place, and we'll be expanding that as we experiment and learn more about the approach that we're trying.
IBM said they would be contributing. Do we know, were they contributing to Daniel Bloom's code base or Ian's code base?
They have reached out to Daniel Bloom. He's here. He could talk himself, I guess. I don't need to summarize for him. But yeah, they have reached out to sort of get started. I don't know exactly what the status of that is as of today.
Yeah, it's not gone much further than we've connected and are coordinating to work on it. He's kind of in a more getting familiar kind of phase right now, so it's onboarding time, I guess.
I did appreciate the immediacy of their acting on the commitment to start getting involved. That was awesome.
Next question. We briefly discussed trying to harmonize the two approaches, perhaps by having a reference agent that gets plugged into the agent test framework, whatever we're calling it, agent test runner. My understanding is we decided not to move forward with that in the short term.
I believe that was the, yes, I believe that was the case. That was the rough decision. The short answer is that unless you're going to actually build a code you're going to use, devoting time to build a completely separate sort of reference implementation was a burden that no one really wanted to step up for.
So the thinking is it would take extra work than pursuing Daniel's approach.
Yes, although there's the argument that pursuing Daniel's approach is more work as well. I think what we need to do is flesh out Daniel's approach and demonstrate more protocols tested that way and attributes there. And then as we have a little bit more of examples there, we can do some more compare and contrast. So I anticipate further conversations about these topics.
That makes sense. Let me rephrase what I just said. So we decided that it was more work to do a reference test agent as part of the test runner than to do both a Daniel's approach to test suite and Ian's approach to a test runner.
I got lost in your question slightly.
So we have two separate teams taking.
You skipped, Richard. We lost your audio. Richard, you back?
Yeah, his audio is gone.
I think we lost him entirely.
Sorry,
can you
hear me?
Yeah, Richard, there you're back.
You're back.
So I was trying to clarify, we have two separate teams building approaches to testing today, so there's some redundancy there. But we're saying that to take Daniel's Bloom's approach and plug it into Ian's approach would be even more work than running both at the same time.
Yes, and it's not even that simple because of the difference in approaches. Daniel's approach is not a full agent. It's the skeleton with all the guts revealed to allow, you know, deep inspection in the messages and things. And so, yes, that's the short answer, is that that's not an option that we decided to pursue.
Okay. Thanks for answering my questions.
Awesome. And with that, we are out of time. We didn't get to some of the other conversations we had, although I think that's the big one. One thing that I want to highlight is that we did work on the DiffDidCom charter, and in case anyone didn't hear, we do have a Diff alignment call tomorrow where that will be a topic. That's at noon US Mountain. Here is the Zoom link for that. And we'll be making progress on that topic. And I hope to revisit some of these other things. There was lots of other good progress, and I hope to revisit some of these on future Aries calls. But we are out of time. I wish everyone a fantastic week. And we will be back next week with both a morning call and this one scheduled the regular time on Wednesday.
And that's Sam, going to be our last call of the year, right?
That will be the next week. Will be the last call of the year.
So that's going to be our virtual community Christmas party too, right?
Yes, it's going to bring your own whatever you want to drink to that event.
Yes.
I will start early.
All right. Awesome. Thanks,
extra,
folks.
Extra points for silly hats.
Yes. Thanks, folks. And we will see you next week.
All right. Thanks, Sam. You bet.
Bye. Well.